welcome everyone back to another edition of New Books in Education. This is your host, Ryan Allen. And today I'm excited to bring an author back onto the podcast that I think we had a nice conversation before. And I'm looking forward to talk about this new book. This is Dr. Prudence Joe, professor, Department of Education, National Chungcheong University in Taiwan. And she co-edited a book with Jonathan Spengler, a doctoral fellow, Institute of European and American Studies, Academica Sinica. And this is Chinese Education Models in a Global Age, Springer, 2016. Prudence, thank you for joining me today.
Yes, my pleasure.
If we could, maybe just could you tell a little bit about yourself and your co-editor, and then maybe just the makeup of the authors. You have quite an exciting list of authors from people all around the world, I think.
We had quite a few contributors, you know, 27 authors from 9 countries. And the Chinese education model, if we put in Chinese, it's foreign, means the not only Chinese at home, but also overseas Chinese or Chinese all over the world, instead of just single China education. Jonathan is also a doctoral fellow at NCCU, and me myself, coupled with some professors from Professor Ruth Heho and Junior Kwan. They are all very well-established scholars in this Chinese education research area for a long, long time.
Yeah, absolutely. We had Ruth on the podcast last year, I believe. So it's all connected, I think.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
Can we talk about the inspiration? You're sort of focusing on this and maybe an important sort of time in Chinese education studies or education studies. What was the inspiration?
I think the most important part is the rise. You know, especially the rise of China nowadays in economic, political, and military, and cultural as well. So that I think there's a need to see how, you know, this broader picture among the Chinese communities are doing, and also if they have any common ground or different aspects in terms of their education achievement. And also, when we look into the PISA teams and also many other international student assessment, we also see many Chinese students, or I should say Chinese, not only from China, but also foreign education communities, that they also accomplish quite well. Students such as in Hong Kong, China, Taiwan, even Singapore, Macau, they are doing quite well, especially in the written exam assessment. So I think there's a need, and also because there hasn't been any work in this regard. There are tons of works on Chinese education, means that PRC alone, Chinese education, but they are not, or even I haven't seen any in the in specific discussing the foreign, the Chinese all over the world. So we are, you know, we are very happy to, you know, come up with this idea to see whether there are any commonalities or differences among Chinese people around the world, and how there are any common trait or any inspiration that Chinese education model could exist or could also contribute to the rest of the world.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. So you're essentially taking, not just when we hear China or Chinese, often, as you mentioned, that's, you know, people think of PRC, but you're looking at this massive group across the world that are not just living in Asia, that might be living even in Africa or South America. Of course, in Chinese communities in North America are quite known. So you're kind of trying to take all of those and understand sort of what's the makeup, or how are they succeeding in education?
Yeah, and also what kind of any failure, or no, we'd like to share these stories, you know, about the Chinese community around the world. And also, in the long run, we try to create a platform for debate, whether there is one single Chinese education model or not, and also encourage a broader understanding of Chinese and Chinese-ness, you know, in so to speak. And also, you know, as I mentioned before, we try to promote author diversity and inclusivity by inviting you know, authors who are interested in this regard, and also so not only Chinese scholars, but also we also include many Westerners and also some from North and South America, and also it's all over the world, and whoever are interested in this you know, topic, they are more than welcome to join us. Yeah,
sure.
Of course, we like to serve as a foundation for future research as well, because I've done quite a few talks over this book, and I realized that the deeper we dig in, the more we need to fulfill in the future. So that's why I'm thinking about the second volume or the third volume in the future.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. So it really sounds like you're trying to build sort of a framework for future studies. Can you talk about maybe what that framework might look like, or to study this quote unquote Chinese education models?
Yes, as I mentioned before, there's a diversity in this special issues, especially you know, how we when we were dealing with this whether there should be a single Chinese education model, as most people will consider, you know, oh yeah, Chinese education model should be something like a very Confucianism, or you know, very exam driven and very rote memory, something like that. But actually, when we you know, try to bring our discussion about this project, we realized that how does this topic, you know, for example, we always ask the authors, you know, whether there should be one single or multiple education models in this Chinese community, in many Chinese communities. And for example, we always ask them to focus on a specific question. How does your chapter represent a Chinese education model or models? So we structure, as you say, with the main four parts of this framework. When we try to deal with the past, especially part one in the book, when past meets future, which was more dealing with historical cultural aspects. For example, you know, how the modern Chinese education system evolved since 19th century, and how they you know, developed over time, and how Chinese education adapted from you know, Western model as well. Something like that we try to deal with in the first section. And the second section is the when East meets West. We realize that because there is such a vast, you know, region that we are covering, so that many education theories and practices not only limited to the East in China alone, but also the West. For example, we also deal with some Chinese communities or Chinese acquisition, such as in Canada, in New York, or even in Australia,
sure,
or New Zealand,
sure,
and also so that we'll try to see, you know, how, what kind of models that we can, you know, come up with, and how what kind of features that authors can present from their, you know, own educational practices and also theories. And the third one is, of course, we have to deal with theory and practices, so that's how we come up. Some of the authors, they also try to look into the historical background, you know, anything to do with the Chinese education model, for example, the cultural part, Confucius, and also the even nowadays the neoliberalism, how that theory has been adapted into the Chinese education practices. And the last one, conclusion, we try to come up with some sum up the features of our book. That would be something more interesting. Maybe I can share with you later. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. That mm-hmm. I would certainly personally be interested in that sort of theory side and sort of how you guys wrapped it up. If we could maybe talk about some of those lessons that came out of it. You present sort of these attributes that I think maybe are themes that you found in all the different studies or works. And you have sort of 3 points, dynamism, hybridity, and heterogeneity. Can you kind of talk about those 3 factors and how they play into this model?
Yes. The Chinese education models are very dynamic, especially when we say it's changing over time, as I mentioned previously. For example, we have a chapter looking into the foundation of the modern Chinese education system from 1850, and we come up with that Chinese education has been changing over time, not only to fulfill the government officials during the imperial exam era before 1905, but also in the later time that education also served as the national development, of course, economic development as well, and also the individual fulfillment for students alone. So you can see the education theories and practices are very dynamic and changing, when the time evolves. The first one.
Sure.
And the second part, that we found that Chinese education models are, made up of hybridity, which means that the Huaren Jiaoyu Chinese education models are very much influenced by other education models. For example, we also provided a chart that a timeline that explained the how education model development stages in many, for example, since the mid-1980s up to current period. And we can see that the influence are really huge. For example, not only from traditional Chinese culture by the Confucianism and also Taoism and also Buddhism as well. Also the influence of German models, influence
sure.
of American model, Japanese model, British models are also part of this story. So I guess that it's and not let alone that Chinese education now, it's many Chinese communities in North America or even in the South, Australia, New Zealand, how they carry on Chinese language acquisition. Based on their social context,
sure.
the need of the social context. So it's also very interesting to see how Chinese education has tailored, to the context.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And the last one is the, as you mentioned, that Chinese education model are full of, how do you say?
Heterogeneity, like different contexts and different, yeah.
Different. For example, when we do, as I mentioned before, the Chinese education models also cover a huge geographic region, whether it's based on country, it's based on rural or urban, it's another huge, story, a big discussion over the book. And so discipline, we also deal with math, foreign languages, and Chinese language acquisition issues in the book. And also the other one is whether institution type and level, whether it's university, kindergarten, or public or private, it's also, the format, the form, it's quite a diverse, topic. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I especially interested in sort of the idea of thinking about the Chinese model globally. I think that's important to remember. Mm-hmm. That often maybe gets lost in some of our studies that we do. And of course, institution type, moving from kindergarten or preschool education even, up to the university, certainly is going to have a different... go ahead.
I have to say, it's a very ambitious project. When
sure.
we start with this one, as I mentioned, we call for chapters run over all over the world. Although we target... less than 100 authors who have been in this area,
mm-hmm.
and so we didn't want to limit themselves because we are looking into their research mainly. So in the end, we came up with a diverse contributing chapters all over topics. So that also represent the diversity. Of the Chinese education model in reality.
Right, right. You also talk about the different elements, and you have this nice little model that we can't see on the podcast, but sort of Chinese education mm-hmm. in the middle, and then all these arrows coming out, shooting to norms, shooting out to institutions, and shooting out to individuals. Can you kind of talk a little bit about these elements and how they factor into this as well? Getting into the theory side.
Sure. For example, the models we found are made up of norms. Many they are relating to like cultural heritage or what society that education system is based upon, or teaching and parenting practices. Especially, we were in the beginning. I was trying to invite some of the celebrities, such as the Tiger Mom, Professor Amy Trash, to join us. Unfortunately, she couldn't make it.
Sure.
And also, learning is also very, very controversial. Whether the Chinese students are very exam driven, or they also have been very creative in the global era.
Sure.
So I think these issues are also, discussed in our book in the norms aspect.
Right.
And and the second one, the norm, we also touch upon example to be more specific, like the one I just mentioned about society. We come up with some very common, common features. For example, society, we deal a lot with social mobility, national development, meritocracy, collectivism, and family or society cohesion, something like that in our discussion of the societal aspects. And also teaching and parenting, we also deal with, whether ideal teachers are very authoritarian figure or they are very student-centered. We see diverse, diverse models within this teaching and parenting model.
Right.
And learning, emphasis on hard work and persistence are very common among the Chinese society, even today.
Sure, sure. How about institutionally? Do we find some commonalities across or at least some maybe key themes?
We found that it's very interesting, especially education, For example, the teacher's social status has been high, since many, many centuries ago. So that even today, the institution part, teacher education has been always the core for national development, and also. And also many of the education sectors are owned by government. For example, especially in the eastern part of the world, like Hong Kong, China, Taiwan as well, are many universities are owned by government. Unlike the U.S. model, you know, mostly are private-owned universities. In Chinese society, most universities are government-sponsored, you know,
sure.
We call national government university. And business has played an emerging role these days, so that although many Chinese universities are lacking public donation or something, but it's becoming more and more so, especially when parents spend so much money on children's shadow education.
Right.
I mean, cram school or 补习教育 means supplemental education, that education before college, or I should say K-12, becoming very, very, sometimes could be very, very business oriented.
Right.
It means that parents invest a lot from their own pocket money, something like that. So?
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, go ahead.
And then because education has been always very the core in Chinese communities, parents spend lots of, you know, they always try to push their kids ahead, you know, no matter at what cost. You know, that's for some reason, I mean, maybe it's part of culture or because of the society job market or the way social function has been, you know, reproduced, that education has been always a very important, how do you say, practice or a concept.
Sort of a cultural characteristic, maybe something.
Yes.
Something like
yes,
that.
Yes. And, you know, for example, in China, they just had their college entrance exam.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In China and also in Taiwan, in Hong Kong, Macau as well. And that event, you know, for example, the traffic should detour, or there will be policemen on the street that to ask them not to, you know, honk or a passenger or something like that. It's always very, very interesting to see that how education play a major role in this society.
Right. And so did in some of the research, did you also find that when these communities are abroad as well, they strongly retain that identity?
Yes. For example, I mean, the Tiger Mom issue has been one of the major debates or controversies in the U.S.
Right.
Not long ago. And also, you know, it's still, it's sometimes from Westerner perspective, it's hard to believe how Chinese parents or, you know, Chinese descent, that still value education so much on their children. For example, you know, the Chinese education model are also made up of individuals, which include teachers. Teachers, as I mentioned, are also very highly respected.
Mm-hmm.
In most of the Chinese societies, students are also very important to play their role, although many of them are, you know, very concerned about exam results. And more students, they are coming up and, you know, try to voice out their opinions. And also employers, taxpayers, policymakers, and so on are also very concerned with the education policies and how education can prepare for their future employees.
Sure.
Something like that.
Hmm? Sure. If we could, kind of moving to the end, the kind of thing, conclusion of the book, I think you kind of set up something for future research just to think about, or maybe to give us a jumping off point. Can you kind of talk about some of those aspects that you're hoping
for? Yeah. I think the book is only a start. As I mentioned, we try to create a platform, a framework to begin with our argument whether the Chinese education model or models exist around the globe. And we came up with this, you know, diverse discussions over these Chinese education models. Mm-hmm. So I guess after this project, we are very looking forward to some issues such as that we think there should be more case studies, specific and concrete case studies from various Chinese communities around the world, and then the success and failure stories to be portrayed or analyzed. Because very often especially in the U.S., many Asian students are considered always the successful generation, but actually not exactly. There are also some failure stories that deserve attention as well. So I guess there's kind of mixed stories that we should portray and to share with the rest of the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also,
go ahead.
And also, what the world can learn from these Chinese education models, especially how resilient, I have to say, I use the resilient, the models continue to carry on regardless of Chinese migrations or even in a suppressed world, that this kind of education has been very indebted to their mentality that they carry on regardless whether they are in a developed world or they were trapped in a suppressed regime.
Right.
Education does carry on.
Right. It's remained sort of salient throughout this society. Okay. Well, fantastic. So we always ask one final question on the New Books Network, and you kind of covered a little bit, but I still want to ask, so what's next? What's your next sort of project that you're working on?
Because of this book, if I want to put it in this way, I think it's a series of my research topics that I like to share with my audience and readers.
Sure.
Right now, I wrote two chapters in this book, a couple with the preface and also the editing work. I'm dealing with the world-class university project.
Okay.
That, especially in this book, we found out that the world, so-called world-class university ranking started in Shanghai Jiao Tong University and also QS and London Times Higher Education Supplement.
Right.
They created a tremendous impact on university operation and management and government in not only in China, but also in Taiwan and Macau, Hong Kong, Singapore, many Confucius heritage area. So I guess especially as I mentioned before, the SSCI syndrome or the point system, which means how many papers, journal articles you published in certain criteria with the high impact factor, something like that, becoming very, very instrumental in quantitative oriented, that at the expense of university academic autonomy and freedom. That's something I think we need to really give our voice and say no. And so that's my next project, would be something that I can hopefully, with this Chinese education model as a foundation, we can come up with some kind of alternative ways of looking into what world-class university means.
Yeah, fantastic.
Contexts.
Yeah, that's personally, I'm writing my dissertation on that, so maybe we can chat off the podcast a little bit. So definitely interested from my personal perspective, and we look forward to that future work. But I do thank you for being on the podcast today. Thank you for rejoining us again from your previous work. And to all my listeners, please go check out Chinese Education Models in a Global Age. I thank Dr. Prudence Cho, who joined us today, and also her co-editor, Jonathan Spengler. And to everyone out there, I hope you learned something.